And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let's go back to open line calls. Let's go to Fred in Anchorage, Alaska. Welcome to the program, Fred.
Hi, George.
How's life? Everything good?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How's Alaska these days?
Oh, man, it's nice up here. It's starting to get a little bit hot.
Well, that's a good
thing. It's only 60 degrees, but that's hot for us.
Any virus problems up that way?
No, we're starting to open up a little bit. We're like at 50% at the hotel where I work, where the restaurant was like zero. Now it's 50%, opened it up. But we're opening up. We're still being careful. And we're a little isolated, so we're doing well.
That's good. Good for you.
Yes, sir. Yes, my mom had a story about Iliamna.
Oh, yeah, the lake monster, whatever's in there, right? What did mom tell you?
She didn't tell me what it was, but she told me the natives would paint their boats red on the bottom, and they'd leave you alone.
Huh. Interesting, because they hated the color red, right?
For some reason, they don't like it.
Yeah, that's what Dave Weatherly was saying. That's weird. Did your mother ever see this creature?
No. We live right across the inlet from there.
Yeah.
So we're not that far from Anchorage to Iliamna. So, yes, sir, it's not very far, but that's the story I've been told.
That's a great story. I mean, there's got to be some kind of creature out there. And as a lot of calls have been, they think it's that huge sturgeon fish. But who knows what it could be. Let's go next to Bill in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program. Hey, Bill, thanks for calling.
How you doing, George?
Good.
Thanks. Yeah, I don't know if you remember, we've spoken a couple times recently when you had Bob Hastings and Judy Mikovich on the program.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I used to cover radio for the radio features for the LA Times and the OC Register in the late 80s.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and I thought you might be the person for this because you go back about the same time I do, maybe a few years more, but I developed a thing called Paranormal Politicians. And I was thinking I might run a statement by you and see if you can guess who says it.
Okay.
Okay. I think the grays are causing global warming. We need to put them in a log box.
Bill Clinton?
Close.
Jimmy Carter.
It's Al Gore.
Al Gore. He was my third guess.
Really?
Yeah, I would have said him the third time.
Well, maybe this one would be more up your alley. Since you go back about as far as I do, I am not a crook, but
Richard Nixon.
Jackie Gleason, a souvenir alien.
Richard Nixon. That's very good. He almost sounded like him.
I must tell you, George, that Nordic alien chick was hot.
That's got to be Jimmy Carter.
no, he wouldn't like that.
He was pretty spiritual, wasn't he?
Right.
Still is. Still going.
This is his opposite.
Who would that be?
That would be old Bill Clinton.
Okay. I love it. Good job, Bill.
You're a good sport. Thanks.
Okay, my friend. Good job. Louise is with us in Louisville, Kentucky. Hello there, Cleopatra.
Thank you, George. I am the original Louise from Louisville.
Yes, you are. As opposed to any imposters.
Yes, Octavia made it a law that no one was to be named Cleopatra after her death.
Oh, really?
He made it a law, and no one was to co-join the names Mark and Anthony again after their death.
And did that hold up?
Well, Mark Anthony held up, but not Cleopatra.
Somebody else got named Cleopatra?
No, no one has been named Cleopatra since then.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I have 2 points I would like to make. One, I know the reason for the Nelson Mandela effect regarding the lion, the lamb, and the wolf.
The Mandela effect. You know why it's happening. Okay.
And it is in the book of Isaiah in the Bible, chapter 11, talks about the lion, the lamb, and the wolf. And then you have to go to chapter 65, and it talks about the lion, the lamb, and the wolf again. And those are the two times that confuse people because it's mentioned two times. In chapter 11, it talks about the coming of the Prince of Peace, and in chapter 65, it talks about the coming of the new day. And this is why people are so confused about it. You have to read the whole Bible through almost, and then you will be able to figure it out.
You know your Bible, I'll tell you that.
I have an excellent memory. I have one other point I would like to make.
Uh-huh.
In the book of Daniel, chapter 11, it talks about Cleopatra. And it's in chapter 11, it says, the daughter of the king of the south went to the king of the north, that's Julius Caesar. And the daughter, it said, the daughter, her court, and the baby. And the reason it was verified for me was by David Jeremiah, the Christian minister who was on radio and TV. And so he was talking one day. I listened to him, and he said, I think the daughter is Cleopatra. And he mentioned it three times while I recorded it. And then I went back again because I had already figured it out. But I have never heard anybody mention Cleopatra's name in regard to the book of Daniel. And I was so happy. And I wanted to let you know that go to the book of Daniel, chapter 11, and it says the daughter. But in the Jewish Bible, I studied five different Bibles. In the Jewish Bible, it mentions the daughter, her court, and the baby. In all of the Bibles, it just says the daughter. They do not mention the baby.
What were the years Cleopatra lived?
Well, she changed the dates herself, but it was, well, she was 39 years old when she died. So they only give her, say, B.C. B.C. means before Cleopatra. That's why it's so easy to figure out.
No, it means before Christ, doesn't it?
No, it means before Cleopatra because nobody really knows when the baby was born, but we do know when Cleopatra died because that is when Octavian started the year one. That's why we know that we are in year 2020 because when he went in, Mark Antony committed suicide. 9 days later, Cleopatra was dead. And that's why we know exactly how many years it has been.
So what year did she die?
Well,
if she died at 39, was it B.C. or A.D.?
She was 39 years old, but the year Octavian started it all over with year one.
I know, but what year did she die?
She was 39 years old when she died. So it had to be 39 years before year one when Octavian started the year one. Octavian is the one that started. We are living in Octavian's cycle today.
Well, did he start year one right after she died? Maybe
he started
it was
year one not on the first day that he went into Alexander, which was on August the 1st.
Well, she was already dead, though, right?
No, when Octavian went into Alexander, they told Mark Antony Cleopatra was dead because she was in the mausoleum. Mark Antony fell on his sword and died. They took Octavian. Took Mark Antony to Cleopatra. She died in his arms.
He was despondent that she died, right?
Yes, because the two of them are so close that
it's
without like her, he couldn't do anything.
That's like Romeo and Juliet.
Well, that's the same story, George. That's the same people. Mark Antony and I have been together for years and years and years. We always come back together as the same two lovers.
Who's your Mark Antony now?
Tennis player in L.A.
Okay, Louise, you got it. Lloyd's with us in Saskatchewan, Canada. Hey, Lloyd, thanks for calling.
Hello, George. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hope you are, too.
I enjoyed your little art, your previous guest, talking about Alaska and all the strange things up there.
Oh, he's a good guy. Yeah.
He is. He's quite interesting. I've never seen anything on the paranormal end of it, but I do believe that Canada has one of the most dangerous creatures I've come across with wolverine.
They'll rip you apart.
They will. I was a trapper up in northern Manitoba. I talked to you once before. And I had one on my trap line that used to trap me, and he would raid the trap.
Jeez.
And you think I could catch him? I'm a damn good trapper. and tracker, and I couldn't catch them.
They're fast. They're fast and they're vicious.
Yeah, he got the smell of steel, and he set my traps off, take what's in them, rip it apart. And he didn't bother anybody else or stuff, just mine.
You know, the nickname for the Michigan football team is the Wolverines, so they must have a lot in Michigan, too. But they're tough little creatures. You got to be very careful with them. Cassie's with us in Seattle, first-time caller. Hi, Cass. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
I was just wondering if any of the listeners may remember a caller to Art Bell in the 1990s that was making a prediction that it was thought at the time that it was something that was going to happen in the near future, but it seems like it's very similar to what we're experiencing now. He was talking about people needing to protect their respiration and needing to be careful in public, and it seemed like he was speaking from some secret source, like maybe from alien source or something like that.
Now, we've had two guests, Sylvia Brown and the witch Evelyn Paglini, both of whom are dead. They talked about these situations, too.
Right. That's true. That's very interesting also. But but anyway, it seems like it was maybe about 1994, 95.
Now, was this a caller or a guest?
Yes. He was a caller.
Like during open lines or something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. If his call is found, it would be wonderful if it could be played in the first hour so everyone could listen.
Well, if you had an exact date, we could find it for
sure. No, I'm sorry. Okay. My memory is not that good. But I did start remembering that what he said sounds so similar to what we're actually experiencing, because I was really, really worried after hearing that call. I took notice of it and felt worried for a while, but I'm thinking that maybe it was possibly what we're going through now.
Pretty eerie to be sure, Cass. Let's go to Perry in Lompoc, California. Perry, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, George, and thank you for being there for all of us here in this terrible time.
We will be, we've got a great team that'll be here always.
You know, and I just appreciate you guys so much. And Gina was so comforting to me. My mom, 2 days ago, or going on 2 days ago, was diagnosed with, the test of the COVID.
Oh, she's got the 19, okay. Yeah, is she showing any signs, any symptoms?
Yeah, she has secondary pneumonia.
Oh, how old is she, Perry?
Going on 77.
Yeah, that's the tough part. Is she in the hospital, or where is she?
Yeah, she's in the hospital. She was in a nursing facility before.
Ventilator?
Right now, yeah. She's on the full, down the throat, the breathing tube.
Yep. It's got to be very uncomfortable for her.
I'm sorry if I seem a little tired here.
I can understand that. Let's say a prayer for her. Let's hope she pulls through this.
Well, thank you so much, George. And I just wanted to say it was the craziest thing, because 2 days ago she first got the news that she was positive with COVID-19, and that was like in the afternoon, like in the early afternoon.
Right.
And then by mid to late evening, she was in the hospital.
That fast, it hit her.
That fast, but, jeez. You know, I'm talking to some of the nurses there. Maybe it was the stress that, you know, finding out she was...
She had it, and then she panicked or something.
She panicked, yeah.
Where do you think she got it?
From the nursing facility.
Yeah, that happens a lot lately.
And you know what really angers me, but there's always time for that later, is though, I just wanted to say they should have been testing weeks, if not months earlier, you know.
Yep. We're going to put her on the prayer list, Perry.
Thank you so much, my friend.
What's her first name?
Linda.
Linda it is. Okay, thanks, Perry. And Godspeed, my friend. Stay strong. Carlos is with us in San Francisco. Hi, Carlos.
Hi, Mr. Norrie. I just want to wish you a safe flight there
Thank
in a
you.
Couple hours. So I hope that you know everything goes well for you.
Thank
so it's
you.
Not complicated. And my prayers to Perry's mother's Linda there. So I'll keep her in my prayers. You know, I had an off the wall kind of thought. I was just kind of thinking it was related to a guest that you had about within the last month who was a banking expert. And I was kind of, you know, thinking about some of the things he was saying, and I wish I could remember his name. But
was it G. Edward Griffin?
No, it wasn't him, but I did listen to that show, and he's interesting, too. But I'm sure he had some insight on this question, too. And my question is derived from what happened in the mortgage collapse and how there seemed to be a lot of kind of ideological thinking about the banking industry, and then that subsequently seemed to contribute to the astronomical rise of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. And given all of this type of funding that's happening around the management of the corona pandemic, I'm wondering if within your circles of discussions with your sphere of influence, if you're seeing any speculation about cryptocurrency valuation.
What I hear is that crypto is going to get slapped around again and that it's not a great investment. But that's – I'm not in it. I don't invest in it. That's what I hear. So that's something we can just keep our eyes on. Let's take another quick call. Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, hey, George. Thanks.
Sure.
I want to thank you for all your wonderful interviewing you do, and someone needs to interview you sometime because you've interviewed people for so many years. You know more sometimes than the people you're interviewing, I believe, but you keep it down. And one thing I do like is that if someone, instead of someone being cut off, if they have an opinion that is very obviously, you know, kind of not really right, but that's okay. You let them – I'm not saying a belief on whether – there's a past life or so. I'm talking about just something that's straightforward. And once in a while that happens, and you're so kind to let the person always finish their opinion and honor them. And I want to congratulate you on calling this thing way back, about that something's fishy and we maybe shouldn't even shut down. And I got some information I want to give you quickly
sure.
on some of that is that the Jerusalem paper a week ago Sunday had an Italian female scientist that whipped our scientists because she's figured out how this virus works and why it kills older men by far more, and it has to do with that when it's in the body, it feeds off something that's in the hemoglobin, the red blood, and that makes it grow much faster. It's like gasoline on a fire, and that women have cycles, so they don't have as much hemoglobin, and young children and women also some way use their hemoglobin more, and there's a lot more of it, and for some reason, in older men.
Interesting.
And that's contributing to the death thing. But when you look at the fact, and the other thing I want to say is schools, you know, they need to open all these schools and not have them be socially apart or any of that, because in 10 weeks, not in my state, but the whole country, from 0 to 2 were no deaths, 2 to 4 were 2, 4 to 8 were 5, 18 to 23 was 95, and some of these kids are born compromised. This Kawasaki thing, one child has died, that's it. They usually are up to age 5. With this thing, it's 12 to 17, but they can treat that, George.
Absolutely.
And so the only risk would be older teachers, and I'm sorry, they're going to have to stay home or something or take
the risk. Well, that's right. We're going to have to do that. We have to build up an immune system, and the only way to do it is to face this virus directly. We'll be back with a special tribute to the late Stanton Friedman in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. When I was 21 years old, physicist Stanton Friedman was my first interview. He has been the absolute best when it comes to ufology. Well, now it's the one-year anniversary of the death of the physicist Stanton Friedman. Ironically, I was his last interviewee and interviewer as well. It was a strange story, to be sure. We will miss him forever. Here's a story that I've got to tell you, because when I was a 21-year-old reporter back in Detroit, Michigan, just a radio reporter, my first interview was with none other than the guy you're going to hear right now, Stanton Friedman, whom I have coined the phrase the father of modern-day ufology. It was an amazing night in Detroit. I wanted to go cover Stan, and my news director at the time said to this 21-year-old reporter, George, we're not spending overtime on this UFO guy. You're not going. And I said, well, what if I go on my own? He said, that's up to you. And so I did. I went out to Oakland University, where Stan was speaking to a group of people. And we did the interview afterwards. I came back and edited it. And in those days, folks, we didn't have computer technology for editing. We had to splice everything and tape the tapes by hand. But we had a great interview, and I've stayed friends with Stanton Friedman, and he's been a great resource to all of us over the years. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. I love telling that story, Stan.
Well, makes me feel young again, George.
Yes, it does. You remember those days? My
yes,
God.
I do.
Your PowerPoint slides? Jeez, remember? Oh, my gosh.
Well, yeah, I didn't use PowerPoint. I did use slides. And as a matter of fact, I fought using PowerPoint because there was a period there where every conference I attended where somebody was using PowerPoint, there was a problem.
Yep.
I don't like problems. You know, I travel on my own, and I can't afford to have problems. So I stuck with slides, and then finally somebody said, Stan, you got to use PowerPoint. We'll walk you through it. Don't worry about it. They forgot it cost me a bundle to put all my slides on PowerPoint, but I did it, and I've been using it ever since, and I'm getting modern, George.
Yes,
you
are, my friend. How are you feeling health-wise now?
Well, hey, I'm feeling great, except for being old. You know, I had a heart attack a couple of years ago, and I haven't even used any of the nitro they insisted I carry with me all the time.
Really? I mean, you just need it, and you're supposed to take it if you need it, I guess, right?
Yeah. You carry a little bottle in your
pocket. Well, good. So you haven't had any need. That's a good sign.
Haven't had any need, and haven't had any sequel, and... you know, I'm not worried about it. I'm still feeling good. My memory isn't quite as good as it used to be, George. I'll warn you, when you get to be my age, it falls off a little bit. But, you know, I'm doing fine. And it's been interesting because I have been traveling. I was just down in Mexico at a conference.
They love ufology down there, don't they?
They seem to, and I'll be in a few hours. I'll be taking off for Arkansas for the
Ozark Martin, right? It's
the what?
Eureka Springs
event.
Eureka
Springs, yes. I will be there. But believe it or not, George, it's the first time for me at Eureka Springs.
You'll like it. There are good people there.
Well, yeah, I have no doubt about that. I like everywhere. Look, I was in Sofia, Bulgaria back a few months ago. It was fine.
What do they all feel about UFOs, Stan? Worldwide, what do they say?
Well, I've only spoken in 19 countries, so I can't say world.
Oh, that's
but,
all.
You know, a pretty good sampling. And people are interested, they're curious, they're relatively ignorant. I mean, I check... It's one way to keep down the nasty, noisy negativists is I talk about large-scale scientific studies, and I ask how many people here have read this. And a guy's got to have a little more guts than usual to speak out nastily, negatively, if he hasn't read any of the material we're talking about, you know. So I've only had 11 hecklers in well over 700 lectures, George. And two of them were drunk.
And the rest, do you think they were plants? Sent there by other groups and people?
No, there is a small cadre of sometimes professional people who think that they know it all and they don't need to do any homework. If there were anything to flying saucers, they would know about it, and they don't, so there must not be, and this is a bunch of baloney. And that's a very small group of people. And, you know, what can you say? There are con artist, con against meaning, on every subject. And I'm told that if you talk about sports, religion, politics, you'll get far more hecklers out of 700 lectures than I have, than 11 minus 2. So I am not somebody who does what I do because I like the slings and arrows of outraged listeners. I don't get that. Look, my basic rule is pretty straightforward. Have facts in hand before putting mouth in gear.
That's true. And you know your facts.
Yeah, and I try to keep up with things, and that's and there have been changes in people's understanding. I mean, Kathleen Martin and I have written three books together. One of them is Science Was Wrong, 14 chapters, each one stimulated by some very smart guy saying something stupid, like the great astronomer Simon Newcomb 2 months before the Wright brothers' first flight. That if there was one thing he was sure of, men would never fly any distance in a vehicle. Maybe in a balloon, but not in a vehicle. It was 2 months before the Wright brothers' first flight in 1903. Another great astronomer in the Astronomer Royal, mind you, of England, in 1956, made a loud noise in Time magazine, among others, saying that space travel is utter bilge. There was talk about, you know, going here or there with people on board vehicles. What nonsense. Who's going to pay for it? What good would it do? What we need is better instruments for astronomy, was the attitude. And a year later, Sputnik went up. And what field of science has benefited most from the space program? Astronomy. We got all these fancy vehicles up above the atmosphere. And they've changed. The important thing is, they have changed our view of the universe, if you will.
Yes, they have.
Greatly. I mean, less than 100 years ago, we thought there was one galaxy, ours, the Milky Way. You know, and we've come a long way since then, billions of galaxies, each of them with billions of stars. But something else has happened, more subtly. The notion of planets.
Stan, working on any new works, any books these days?
Well, our newest book, Kathleen Martin and my, our third book together, came out in September, Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers.
Aha! Uh-huh.
And the focus is on how did people like Dr. Edward U. Condon, a very prominent scientist.
Yeah, that's right. Colorado University, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, University of Colorado. Yeah. And Dr. Donald Menzel, Harvard University astronomer, and Philip Klass, a noisy negativist who worked for Aviation Week and Space Technology. How did they wind up saying such dumb things? Well, I mean, you know, you expect something better from competent, prominent people.
Or, Stan, were they paid to say dumb things?
Well, that's part of the question. And I found out my great discovery in all this was that Menzel, whom I didn't like when he was alive, and who wrote three debunking UFO books, not one, not two, three, and gave articles and stuff, I found out, much to my surprise and everybody else's surprise, and not known while he was alive, had a longer continuous association with the National Security Agency. 30 years, he told Jack Kennedy, President Kennedy, they knew each other, of anybody. He did classified work for the CIA. He was a world-class cryptologist. This came as a total shock. Nobody knew any of this while he was alive. I looked very hard and were surprised. But since a few years ago, there was even an article about his, cryptologic contributions of Donald Menzel. So for people who think guys can't lead a secret life, you're wrong. There were three English spies, incidentally, Burgess, Philby, and McLean, you may remember. They were all Russian spies, but they worked for British intelligence for 15 years. That's leading a double life, wouldn't you say?
Well, I would think so. I would think so.
You've got to be really careful, but Condon, he said, no chance that anybody will be visiting Earth for 10,000 years. Yeah, there's no scientific basis for that at all. Just look back 100 years and find out what we didn't know back then, you know. So moving forward. That's the newest book anyway.
Oh, good for you. Now, before we take calls, I want to get your take on the late Zechariah Sitchin, his theory that we were genetically altered by a ET group called the Anunnaki. What do you think?
I leave room for it. I don't have a definitive answer because I said I like to have facts in hand before putting mouth in gear, but it's certainly possible. You know, we tend to forget that explorers go out for all kinds of reasons. Look at all the people who came to the New World after Columbus. Some wanted to steal gold, you know, some wanted to convert the heathens, some wanted to grow vegetables, you know, tomatoes, potatoes, etc. Some wanted to set up new colonies with different religious ideas. So there isn't one size fits all. I leave room for this having been, how shall I put it, engineered, if you will. And it, everything changes as soon as you realize, hey, there's loads of planets out there. You know, find a good one for your purposes. And also, we tend to forget that every civilization, if it's got any sense, is going to be prepared in case something really bad happens and you need to bail out. An asteroid, for example, you know, like did in the dinosaurs, or a nuclear war. You may want to look around for a nearby planet where you can go and reestablish yourself. You know, maybe global warming raises the water level and you're going to be underwater. Who knows? So it may be that there are neighbors. Like I say, over 10,000 planets within 100 light years, that's a lot of neighbors.
Let's take some calls for you, Mr. Friedman.
Okay.
Stanton Friedman with us, Joe in Syracuse, New York, to get us started. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hey, George, Dan. How are you guys?
Great. Thank you.
Great. I got a question. How come nobody really talks about the UFO crash in Missouri in 1941 and the ties to advanced technology for the war effort, forward-looking radar? Sonar technology.
That's the Cape Girardeau episode. We've talked about it on the show before. Not a lot of people do. You're right, Joe. Stan, are you familiar with that Cape Girardeau situation?
I've talked to Charlotte Mann, and I found other people in her family. It was her, I guess her grandfather, who was called in to give the last rites for survivors. Yeah, you know, it sort of gets lost in the shuffle. There was a war came along very quickly, you know, and kept people busy with other things. But there's also Aztec. One of the books listed on my website is the true story of Aztec, where Scott and Suzanne Ramsey have done an incredible job of gathering information, including paperwork that we didn't know existed. And Kecksburg, there have been several crashes. UFOs aren't the drivers aren't infallible, apparently. But, you know, you can understand how governments don't want to talk about that sort of stuff. We live on a planet in which nationalism is the only game in town, right? You get to be powerful by running a country and taking over other countries and stuff like that. We don't have a planetary government. I mean, we've got the United Nations, but it certainly doesn't rule the roost on this planet. So it's a major concern for anybody not to let the rest of the world know that we know something, because maybe we can find out what they know and put it together with what we know and come up with a new military system.
You got it. You got it. I was with Don Schmidt this weekend taping a television program, which I've got to get you for that. And we talked about Roswell and some of the episodes tied into that. And I had asked him a question of a fellow I interviewed a long time ago when I was doing my local radio show in St. Louis years ago, Stan. Frank Kaufman tied in to Roswell, and he thought Frank was a fraud. What did you think about him?
Well, I agree with them. Don was there when I was talking to Frank and Don and Kevin Randall, and he really had nothing to back up his story. And then Don, fortunately, got access to his papers after Frank died and found that he had fake documents. He really had nothing to offer. I mean, it was a crazy story to begin with. And so, yeah, Frank was an opportunist. Isn't that a polite way of saying he was telling stories?
Yeah. It was a great story. He told a great tale. For Michael Cosio, Gina Salvati, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.